welcome aboard the Battleship Pretension. I am Tyler Smith.
I am David Bax.
And thank you for listening, David.
I don't listen, but...
Yes, I know. maybe if you did, the show would be better, because you could hear all the things we're doing wrong.
Well, why don't you listen, then?
Because we do a lot of things wrong, and right, I, you know, it just make me feel bad.
Yeah.
How you doing, David?
I'm fine, I guess. I don't know.
Making it?
Yeah, you know what? Have I talked about this on the podcast?
I don't know.
About a year ago, right, almost exactly a year ago, it was right before Thanksgiving last year,
mm-hmm.
I started meditating.
You've not talked about it on the show, and I don't think you've told me.
Yeah, I have. I've definitely told you. I remember telling you.
Well, you know what? Admittedly, I don't listen to you either. Yeah.
Well, also, I feel like your kids are still young enough that you've got that card. Like, sorry, I'm scattered.
That's probably true. Yes,
brain or whatever. Yeah, and so it's been like almost a year. And I think a really smart thing, a good thing, happened lately, mm-hmm. recently, because I use this meditation app. I'm not going to name.
Right.
Are you sure I haven't talked about this?
Maybe on the show, I don't think so. No. Maybe on an episode that I wasn't on, possibly, but.
Because I don't want to, like, name the app for whatever reason.
Right.
But it has, like, it has these guided meditations, but it also has, like, a run streak counter, like how many days in a row you've meditated, and that, I feel like, is counterproductive for me.
Oh, 100%.
And so I've been doing it since November, but while I was on vacation, in vacation mode, I forgot to do it for a couple of days, and, like, there was a second of me being like, oh man, I broke my run streak. But now, like, I think the meditation is working for me better now that I've broken the run streak, that I'm just like meditating every morning. And so, like, you ask how I'm doing, like, if I were to tell me a year ago all the shit that I'm juggling right now, both just like work's very busy, the website and podcast are very busy, there's also like personal stuff going on that I can't talk about and don't want to talk about, but like if I told myself this list of things a year ago, I would have been like, oh, you must be fucking miserable, you must be like a black cloud, everyone around you is hating their life when you, as soon as you walk into a room. But I'm like weirdly able to, I guess, weather it a little better, I think, because the meditation has taught me to, like, it sounds corny, but like be more in the moment, like like I know. It's like, yeah, I know I have a bunch of shit on my plate, but I also know that right now the thing that I'm doing is recording this podcast, and that's just what I'm doing right now, and I'll worry about the next thing next.
Yeah, it's obviously easier said than done, and certainly there's a Christian version of it where it says, like, let tomorrow worry about itself and all that, and it says that in the Bible, and part of me is just like, yeah, easy for you to say. You're a book.
Let tomorrow worry about itself.
Yeah.
Is actually like,
or sorry, it might be tomorrow's worries or something like that. There are a lot of different translations.
Yeah. Cause I don't know that
like each day has enough,
a little more modern.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. That's probably me, paraphrasing, but yeah.
Anyway, but, you wanted to talk about, something very, a very normal reaction that you had to, some news recently.
Here we go. Yeah. Okay. So Matthew 6:34. Sorry, everybody. This is not more than one lesson. Therefore, do not worry about tomorrow, for tomorrow will worry about itself. Each day has enough trouble of its own. But yeah,
we are. I know. Yeah. So this isn't more than one lesson, but we are allowed to acknowledge that the Bible exists on this podcast.
You know what? I guess we'll see in the comments. And so. I did have, okay, so this is, at this point, this is a week and a half old.
Okay.
And it's going to sound so silly to people, maybe. I don't know. So, recently, and of course, I don't think it's ever official, but it might be as official as it's going to get.
Okay. Depending on whom you ask.
True.
I'm more of a skeptic.
I think I am too, but for different reasons.
We'll get to it. All right, go ahead.
So, apparently the Zodiac Killer has been identified by, like, there's a group of like 50 investigators that, like, they work with each other, and their whole thing is they investigate cold cases, and put a lot of time and energy and resources into it and that sort of thing. And so they encountered this, I don't remember, I didn't follow like every step of the way, but they basically said like, okay, this is about as certain as a person can get on the identity of the killer based on descriptions that people have given of him. And then this other guy who committed a murder, and it's like exactly the same. Like they showed sketches of the guy who committed a murder a few years ago and died in 2018.
Okay.
And then somebody's description of Zodiac. And I mean, it was admittedly, it looks like somebody drew the same thing twice.
Right.
And so I don't remember the guy's name, but as I was reading it, like, and just a lot of outlets picked it up and they said like, this is pretty close. And so I don't know if it's official yet. It's not, we were talking off mic, you know, it's not exactly Deep Throat where Mark Felt just said, yeah, it was me. Like,
yeah.
And because the guy is dead, it's hard to necessarily, it's that much harder if not straight up impossible to ever know officially. But I had, you know, a weird reaction to it, and one that makes me almost feel like this could have been an entire episode, where, you know, I mean, of course I love movies so much and I love art so much. And whenever art dramatizes something in real life,
mm-hmm.
that becomes the real thing for me. You know, like that's not the real thing, but like, that's the thing that I have the most connection with. You know, like I went and visited Hearst Castle, and the tour guide is talking all about William Randolph Hearst. And I was like, why aren't you making him the villain? Isn't he the villain? Isn't that like the whole deal? And then I realized like, oh, right. Not everybody thinks first and foremost of Citizen Kane and then his attempts to destroy Citizen Kane. Some people just see him as a person that existed, albeit a very eccentric, egomaniacal person, but whatever. Anyway. And so, you know, obviously, and when you get to something like murder, like mm-hmm. the Zodiac Killer, obviously it's a little bit crass to think only in terms of the film. But I found myself having an odd reaction where it's not so much that I was disappointed, that like, let's, for the sake of argument, let's say like, this is the guy.
Okay.
It's not so much that I was disappointed as it was just like, okay, so like every movie made about the Zodiac Killer, whether it be and speculating on his identity, whether it be the David Fincher film or a documentary, whatever it is, they're just rendered moot at this point. They're rendered fiction in their own way.
Mm-hmm.
And just like, you know, when you got to 2001, the year, and you realize like, yeah, I don't think we're going to do it, guys. I don't think we're going to make it to the Stanley Kubrick. And like that, obviously that was science fiction, but it was far enough in advance that people could think like, oh yeah, this is feasible or whatever you want to say.
Yeah.
And so I just, anytime like real life runs counter to a movie, I wind up feeling a little bit disappointed because my heart is with the movie more than real life. And so I found myself oddly, it sounds so shitty. Like my first instinct was to feel a little bummed that the Zodiac, again, for the sake of argument, it's the actual guy. A little bummed that he was actually identified, this mystery, and it could actually bring a great deal of closure to families of victims and that sort of thing. And yet my first thought was like, oh, so it's not the guy from Zodiac. Well, shoot. Now I guess Zodiac's a little cheapened. And it's like, not really. It's still a wonderful film.
But I like that you have that attachment.
It's, I don't know. It feels very shallow to me. I don't know.
I don't think I have that, but it's interesting you mentioned Hearst, because I was thinking about this when I saw Mank. And I was thinking about how, like, okay, I, a person in his late 30s who has, you know, seen Citizen Kane and RKO 281 and, mm-hmm. and knows, this, you know, also seen things that aren't movies, has read books and stuff. like, I know that, that this is one point of view on this character. Mm-hmm. And there are people who would disagree with that. But if you're, but what I was thinking, like, if you're like a budding film fan, right, in the year 2020, you're like an 18, 19 year old.
Yeah.
You know David Fincher makes great movies. And you see Mank, like, Mank is going to be your version of events.
Yeah.
The way that Zodiac is your version of the Zodiac. Yeah. I remember thinking about that at the time. Like, should I try not to, like, get too concerned with whether or not other people misinterpret things.
Hmm.
But that is, it is interesting to think that a movie, even a movie that's, like, only semi-successful. I guess Mank got nominated for so many Oscars, but
yeah, and it won a few.
When it comes to Netflix stuff, you don't really know.
Yeah,
except for Squid Game, you don't really know how many people are watching. The answer for Squid Game is everyone but me and Tyler.
Yeah, yeah. What's Infinity minus two? That's that's the audience for Squid Game.
I guess I felt weird about, like, was it irresponsible of David Fincher to tell this story this way? And I don't think so.
Right.
My answer is no, he's allowed to tell whatever story he wants, but it is weird to think that people will have their view of history shaped by a fictionalized movie they saw, which I'm trying to think of an example at the top of my head that is true of me, but I can't think of one right now, but I'm sure there are plenty that I'm misremembering how things went. You know, I guess if you mention the Battle of Guadalcanal, I'm picturing scenes from The Thin Red Line.
Sure.
I guess that's, I'm not sure if that's, like, irresponsible of me, but that is the first place my mind goes.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, I mean, I didn't mean to go, I guess I've got Hearst on the brain, but, like, Cat's Meow. That is a speculative movie.
Yeah.
It's just a one rumor of what happened, but it's there. We're seeing it, and whatever's on the screen is what's real in that moment. And so it doesn't matter how much you contextualize it and say that it's based on a rumor or whatever. It feels very real. And I guess in a way I'm almost speaking to, like, just the power of film that, like, that, I mean, if you want to immortalize a real thing, you make a movie of it. However you make the movie, that's how that thing is going to be remembered. And so, it's, and then when real life interferes, it's just like, oh, well, I think I like the movie version more. And even when that to think that way is a little bit crass, I think. So it was weird to feel that inside of me and be like, on one hand, like, isn't that amazing? With that caveat of, like, assuming that it's correct, but isn't that amazing that after all these years, this, you know, decades old mystery has been solved? Like, that's an amazing thing, but it's almost disappointing because Zodiac is such an effective mystery, you know? And now it's a little bit less mysterious. The world's it's a little bit less magical of a world now that Zodiac's been identified.
Well, let me go from that into telling you about tweakedaudio.com. Tweakedaudio.com is where you go for professional quality earbuds in a variety of stylish styles and colorful colors. They look great. They sound great. Tyler and I use them each and every day of our lives. I have a brand new pair, actually.
That's right.
Not a brand new pair of roller skates. I have a brand new pair of tweakedaudio.com earbuds.
But I do have this brand new key. What do I do?
Today I haven't used the brand new pair, but on my old pair, which is still good, still sounds great. Today I was listening to, as I have done a lot since he passed away very early in the pandemic of coronavirus, I've been listening to John Prine. Tyler, I don't know if you're a John Prine guy, but I'm telling you, you're a John Prine guy.
Okay.
You would very much like his sort of country folk, but also highly, he has he's got that wordsmith thing that he can be like very funny, but also be incredibly sad, and clever. You know, he has, song, like the song I was listening to actually as I drove over here today to do this podcast is called the song's called "Yeah, I Guess They Oughta Name a Drink After You," and it's funny. But then I also listened to "Summer's End," which is an incredibly sad song, and it's very, you know, I was aware of him before he died of the coronavirus, mostly through like other artists covering his stuff. I think the first song I ever knew by him was Sam Stone, which I heard covered by someone else whose name I'm forgetting right now. But I feel sad that I didn't get into him more when he was still alive. And you know, we're I mean, knock on every piece of wood you can find, but at least here in Southern California, cases are dropping again. We thought back in May and June we were coming out of this thing, and we weren't. So I don't want to get fooled again.
Yeah. Especially as it gets colder. It does spike when it gets colder.
Yeah, but looking at, with an eye on a future where you know the coronavirus is not going away, but in a future where we're not in a pandemic actively. Right. I'm thinking a lot more about the people that the coronavirus took from us. Mm-hmm. Hey, it sounded good on my tweakedaudio.com earbuds. They're available at a low price at tweakedaudio.com. But if you use the offer code pretension at checkout, you get 1/3 off that low price and no shipping charges. So please go to tweakedaudio.com and use the offer code pretension.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Tyler?
Yes.
Let's get into it, shall we?
Indeed.
Continuing our sort of like on again, off again series of episodes about actors, fun episodes about actors. An episode that, so a couple weeks ago we did TV shows that were turned into movies, inspired by me anticipating The Many Saints of Newark.
Yes.
Then seeing The Many Saints of Newark brought up another idea that I thought of, we talked about before, but actors who play multiple movies where one actor plays multiple parts is what I want to say. Because, and again, if you haven't watched Many Saints of Newark, I'm going to spoil this now. I danced around it on the movie journal, but okay, so be careful. If, skip ahead or wait until you've seen the movie to listen to this if you care. Ray Liotta is in Many Saints of Newark, and then he dies horribly.
Yes.
And then the guy who killed him goes to visit Ray Liotta's brother in prison, and it's Ray Liotta.
Like, yeah.
I love that the movie never mentioned he had a twin brother.
Right.
Just like, oh, I'm going to see my Uncle Sally, and then like Ray Liotta walks out like after we've seen him get his face bashed in. It's such a it was such a like shocking moment, but it's great because he's playing a very different character.
Yeah,
despite being a twin. And that second character that I didn't even know was going to be in the movie is, as we talked about on the movie journal, both of our favorite parts of the movie.
Oh yeah, and both performances are pretty vivid. I mean, we get a sense of Dickie Senior,
Gentleman Dick,
Gentleman, no, Hollywood Dick. Hollywood Dick.
Dickie is Gentleman Dick,
right?
His dad was Hollywood Dick.
Yes,
Hollywood Dick Moltisanti.
And just like the, and it's so interesting because like Hollywood Dick is just like just an awful person.
Yeah.
And you get a sense of like, yeah, this is probably how Sally, Uncle Sally, would have turned out if he had not been incarcerated. Like they probably would have been a lot, not the identical, of course, not, as far as personality, but like they probably would have turned out very much the same. And so you see similarities, but you also see that there came a moment where they diverged heavily. Yeah. And it really is two really solid performances by Ray Liotta.
Yeah, who, by the way, claims he has never watched The Sopranos. But good for him.
Yeah.
And good for him for somehow not being on it the first time. Like,
that's true.
They had every, like, Italian-American actor you can think of.
Yeah.
But missed Ray Liotta the first time. So that just got me thinking about this actors playing multiple roles. And I'm definitely, I don't want to be, like, genre biased, because normally you and I are big defenders of comedy.
Mm.
But I definitely, in looking at movies where this happens, I definitely find it more interesting in non-comedic ways. Often in comedies, it's like hanging a lantern on the fact that Eddie Murphy's playing all these roles, or Mike Myers is playing all these roles, or things like that. And that's sometimes, it's less interesting because it's not, it doesn't feel, it feels more like a comedic exercise than an acting exercise, which is good on its own. And I do think Mike Myers, like, I mean, when I watch Austin Powers, I do forget sometimes that Dr. Evil and Austin Powers are the same actor.
Yeah.
So maybe I'm being too mean, especially since there are actually some really good ones in comedies. One of the first movies I thought of was Joe versus the Volcano, where Meg Ryan plays three different roles over the course of the movie.
Yeah, looking at my list, and it's actually I didn't have time to do a lot of research, so this is all like off the top of my head.
Kind of me too,
and I feel bad. I'm sure I left out a bunch, but I realize like, oh yes, a lot of these are comedic, and it is meant to underline things. I don't think, to the degree that it's meant to emphasize it a little bit, I think Austin Powers, I think it drops that pretty quick, and they just become two different characters completely. And then there are more characters that he plays. So he plays Fat Bastard. He plays Goldmember.
I never found Fat Bastard funny.
There's one line.
I think Goldmember's funny accent is funny.
I've never seen Goldmember.
Okay.
And people say that I should, at the very least, for the opening scene.
I don't think you'd need to.
But, okay.
Goldmember is the character himself. He talks funny and it's funny.
Okay. Fat Bastard, I don't find. I never found that funny, but there are one or two just the line reading. It's just like, ah, that's funny. Like when he the idea of eating a baby and then and trying to eat Mini-Me, and then he tells Mini-Me, get in my belly. It's so ridiculous and over the top, and he sells it, and I laugh every time, even though like on paper it's something I might not find that funny. It's, you know, you get to something like Kind Hearts and Coronets. That's a big one where Alec Guinness plays 8 different roles, none of them particularly developed.
Yeah. I think I remember learning that it's technically, if you want to put an asterisk on it, it's technically 9 roles.
Okay.
Because there is like a painting of like the great grandmother or something on the wall, and it actually is elegant, like dressed up.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so like there, the idea, because they're all members of the same family, yes?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, the idea that is that this guy is just killing all these members, and it's just all the same person, and they are all like two dimensional at best. Like you never get to know them. It's not officially necessary, but it does make it funnier, I think.
Yeah.
And then obviously you've got something like Dr. Strangelove, where Peter Sellers plays 3 roles, and that's one that is sort of like Austin Powers. I forget that the president is played by the same guy as Strangelove.
I think because that's so many of, when I was looking these up, so many of them are, as with like many scenes in Newark, like twins or at least family members.
Right.
I am more fascinated when they're just playing like just completely different people. That happens to be.
Yeah.
The same actor.
There are some, I mean, one of the most baffling dual roles to me is Jack Nicholson in Mars Attacks. He plays two roles in that. Yeah. Like one,
I love that.
And one is very clearly, I mean, he's not in any kind of strange makeup or anything, but he's Jack Nicholson as the president. But then he's also Art. I think his name is Art Land, who runs a hotel and casino in Vegas.
Right.
And he's got like this mustache and this stupid hat and these dark glasses. And he's doing like kind of a Southern type accent. And he's just garish and over the top. There's no reason at all Nicholson needs to play that role.
Yeah.
At all. And it's just so, it's like, I love Mars Attacks. I don't think Nicholson is necessarily the best part of it.
Right.
I feel like he's not given that much to do. And maybe that's the thing. He's like, well, we don't you don't have a lot of laugh lines as the president. So, you know, we'll give you this other character who's also not that funny, really. But he's at least more ridiculous. So it's like, so now you've got stuff to do and you can get paid twice, I guess, maybe. I don't think that works, but I know that like for a while, like on TV, like for voice actors, you got paid like by the character.
Oh, okay.
I don't know if that's the case anymore, but anyway, but that to me is one of the most baffling, because it's just, there's nothing about that Art character that required Jack Nicholson to do it. And if they had cast someone else, cause a big part of Mars Attacks is the ensemble cast, they could have had somebody else play that role. And, it's not that they would have done more with it, but it's just like, I don't know. That one always fascinates me, and my mind goes to it pretty fast. Like, you'll notice here, I wrote on my list, the very top says Kind Hearts and Coronets.
Yeah.
The second one says Mars Attacks. Like,
and I didn't even think of it.
Yeah.
Even though I do love that movie. Yeah, I revisited it a few years ago, because the first, when I saw Mars Attacks, when I was probably like high school freshman, does that sound right?
Freshman, sophomore, right around there. Yeah.
I liked it and I thought it was funny, but also I was like turned off by how like dark it is and how violent like it is. And it was hard for me to like balance that with the comedy. And now that's what I love about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I guess I was just a sensitive kid. But yeah, you talked about a lot of times it's used to, there's family members, which is, I think, the most common, like these are twins or whatever, you know, or it's used to illustrate something, as you were saying, like with Captain Hook being played by the same actor as Mr.
Darling.
Yes. Yeah. I think of Jason Isaacs, right?
But it has always, even in the Disney film, Hans Conried does both voices.
Yeah, that's clearly an intentional thing. I can't remember where I was going with that. I want to go back to siblings or twins.
Mm-hmm.
Another comedic one that I love is Big Business, where
sure.
Batman and Lily Tomlin both play twins separated at birth from each other. So they like,
yeah,
instead of being with their twin, there's like one Bette Midler and Lily Tomlin who grew up rich in the city, and one Bette Midler and Lily Tomlin who grew up poor in the country. And they don't know the other exists. It's a very fun movie.
Now, I do want to be, we did an episode about twins last year, and so I want to be careful not to dwell too much on that. But of course, it is inevitable.
That's a good point. We did do an episode about twins. Because I was going to bring up Jeremy Irons. I'm sure we talked about Jeremy Irons last
year. Yeah, of course. Yeah. Dead Ringers.
The way that as the movie goes on, as Dead Ringers goes on, it becomes just second nature knowing which one is which. It's such a great performance that I know.
Up to a point, though, like, because there's this one thing that I love about Dead Ringers, and you know what? Maybe this is just my perspective on it. It feels like he's giving two very different performances that eventually become the same performance.
Oh, as it goes on, yeah.
Yeah.
They'd be, they feed off each other, yeah.
And then you get, yeah, so I'll just rattle off some twins just real quick. Man in the Iron Mask, Leaves of Grass, There'll Be Blood, that's one that I always forget. But yeah, Paul Dano does play two characters in that, who are brothers, of course. Although I guess there is always the... the possibility somehow
that it's the same
that
guy.
It's the same
yeah.
guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've always wondered that.
And then I guess technically Bowfinger features twins, but you don't realize it for a while.
Right.
And it's a wonderful reveal. Man, that movie, there's a lot I love about that movie. And I think Eddie Murphy does great in that, where he plays like this giant movie star. And this small production's like, oh, we need to try and find a lookalike. And so they find Eddie Murphy again, but his hair is different. He's got braces. He's got these dumb glasses and stuff. And he's just like this. It's a completely different characterization. But, you know, when they change his hair and stuff, they look alike, but just they don't act alike at all.
Yeah. Kind of like the two Hugh Jackmans in The Prestige.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And spoilers, it turns out that there are two Christian Bales as well. I don't think we ever see them interact with each other.
I only saw The Prestige once.
Okay.
So it's been a long time.
But yeah, there's that's a big part of The Prestige. Like, there are twins, but then there is also a lookalike, and that character is very well played. Dave is not about twins. It is about a lookalike.
Right.
And there's really only one scene where the characters are in the frame, and in that moment, I think it's brilliant. In that moment, you realize there are subtle differences. Like, I'm sure it's a makeup effect. One is a little bit paler than the other. And then I think they did something to his nose or whatever. But like, so it doesn't look 100% right. And then obviously they change the hair. So that like when they're next to each other, it doesn't look exactly right, but you can understand when you're only seeing one, you think that that's the president. And I always thought that was really clever. And now that I have twins, not that the characters are twins, but now that I have twins, it's like, yeah, when they're together, I can see who's who. But if you were to just hold up one and say, who is this? I'm like, oh boy, this is going to be tough.
Well, speaking of, impersonators.
Okay.
Or I have two examples in which people who are two examples I can think of on the top of my head in which people who are actually famous in real life play themselves in a movie as well as someone who looks like them.
Okay.
But I'm trying to remember the name of one of those films.
Okay.
Okay. So the first one, Gene Autry, the Big Show. Gene Autry plays Gene Autry and Gene Autry's stunt double.
Okay.
And then there's a French movie directed by Claude Lelouch called Everyone's Life that I saw at Kolkoa, City of Light, City of Angels, a few years back. And someone recently departed, sadly, Johnny Halliday, who's a rock star but also an actor.
Hmm.
He was in Patrice Leconte's The Man on the Train, I think it was called.
Oh, okay.
But he plays Johnny Halliday himself, and he also plays a Johnny Halliday impersonator. Do you have another one you were thinking of?
Well, I know that in Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, I think that, like, I know that Ben Affleck, at the very least, plays himself, and then the character that he played in Chasing Amy.
Interesting.
And then
I don't know if Matt Damon's character, one scene character from Chasing Amy,
appears
in Jason.
I don't think so. It might be the case with Jason Lee as well, actually, that he plays his character from Mallrats and Chasing Amy. In fact, I think that is the case. Isn't Looney Tunes Back in Action a situation where doesn't Brendan Fraser play himself and then also like the security guard?
No, he is a security guard, but you're right. He does also play a different role, and I can't remember who it is.
Oh, okay.
But yeah.
I thought it was himself, but I haven't seen it in many years.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Does he also appear as Brendan Fraser? I thought he played the character and then appeared as a different character, but does he play Brendan Fraser?
Yeah, it's been so long since I've seen it that I don't remember. I thought that was the case, but now I don't recall. I'm looking it up.
There's no, this isn't that, but in nonfiction a couple of years ago, Julie Binoche plays a character, and then at one point her husband, who's a book publisher, is talking about, like, well, we're going to do an audiobook. I think we're going to try and get Julia Binoche to read it. And he's like saying that to Julia Binoche.
And then there's a much more insufferable version of that with Ocean's 12. Where,
never saw it.
Yeah, you're good. You're fine. Where Julia Roberts shows up as herself, but of course she's also the character from the Ocean's film. So yes, Brendan Fraser, pardon me, does play a character DJ Drake and then play himself, and then he also does the voice of the Tasmanian Devil, which I didn't know.
Good for him.
Yeah. So looking at this, another thing that pops up is not necessarily twins, but like members of the same family. Okay. Cate Blanchett in Coffee and Cigarettes plays cousins.
That's right. That's a good one.
It is. And
that's a good one, but that's a good of the Coffee and Cigarettes shorts. That's one of the better ones.
Yeah. And
that
then,
one. Okay. What are the ones you think of? They're all so good. But the
from Coffee and Cigarettes.
Yeah, Alfred Molina one is great.
That one might be my favorite. I do enjoy, just because obviously I'm a Tom Waits fan, I do enjoy Tom Waits and Iggy Pop.
I think about that a lot when Tom Waits says talks about having quit smoking, and he's like, the thing about being quit is you can have one whenever you want because you quit.
Yeah, now that we've quit, let's just go ahead and have one.
Yeah. That one's. But then also, Natalie and I can't just say Bill Murray's name. It has to be course. Bill Murray.
Yeah. And of course, yeah, there are a lot in that film, and I haven't seen it in quite a while. I own it and I should watch it, but yeah. And then what's the, Back to the Future, the Back to the Future series.
Oh yeah. They all play or a number of them do.
Yeah. Certainly, Michael J. Fox plays, especially in Back to the Future 3, and I guess in Back to the Future 2, I think he plays his own son.
Grandkids, or, yeah, the kids. Yeah, yeah. That's what he is. Yeah.
And then he's like his old West ancestor.
But Tom Wilson also played everyone in Biff's lineage.
Yes. Yes. Let's see. I'm trying to think what else. I mean,
but if we have more to like, I feel like this feels more like early Battleship Retention, where we're just like
just listing stuff.
Stuff. I like the idea of talking about why did Jack Nicholson do that?
Yeah.
I get it makes sense in something like Joe versus Volcano or Life and Death of Colonel yes. Blimp to have the same woman play three roles. Like, you know, the men go through changes and they connect with different women over the course of their journeys. And those women are different, but they represent a continuum or the same thing.
Yeah.
Like that's, I guess that it's pretty cut and dry, I guess.
Yeah. And similarly, I would say, Miranda Richardson in David Cronenberg's Spider, in this case, a reason of like a character who is, schizophrenic, I believe, and just sort of past and present all just kind of blends together. So you have like a character played by Lynn Redgrave and then becomes Miranda Richardson, who played his mother as well. And I guess in a way, I know this, even though I haven't seen the film, The Father.
I was about to say The Father
is both, something like that.
Mark Gatiss and Olivia Williams both, mm-hmm. Seem to sort of represent something potentially negative in this person's life. And so they pop up as seemingly different people. We don't know entirely because we're seeing everything through the eyes of a person with dementia. I thought about that one as you were saying, what you were saying about, Spider.
So for me, like the big, you know, the big one is of course Cloud Atlas.
Yeah. I was kind of saving it for last, but, I
mean, I've essentially talked about everything, Oh, you know what? I forgot Mary Poppins. Dick Van Dyke plays two characters.
But that's another one where it's like, why is he playing those two characters?
I guess it's a, you know, they're both comedic. But yeah, there's no particular reason that he needs to play both. You know, it's not a selling point like Nutty Professor or Coming to America, where it's like, oh my gosh, it's Eddie Murphy playing off of himself. Like, it's not really that. It's just something that happens every once in a while. And I say that as though it's like a shooting star or something like that. Choices are made that this is what we're going to do. And it's very strange. And like, you can hypothesize why, but I can't come up, because to do so, I guess obviously you're talking about like artistic decisions, but like, I don't know if there is one behind Dick Van Dyke playing two characters in Mary Poppins.
The one that like bothers me for multiple reasons is in the Harry Potter movies, Warwick Davis plays Professor Flitwick and also plays Griphook, the banker.
Yeah.
Which feels like, you guys, there's more like little people who are actors, you know. You didn't need to get like the most famous guy to play both the roles. And also there's the whole thing of like Griphook and just the goblins in general being like anti-Semitic stereotypes.
I do like his performance as Griphook. I think it's very good, but yes, there is that.
Oh, I thought of another one that I hadn't thought of, but Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey. Keanu Reeves and Alex Winters both play themselves and the evil robot Usses.
Usses, yes.
And they're distinct performances, I think. It's the one, okay. Both of the first two Bill and Ted movies unfortunately contain the one syllable version of the F slur. But at least in Bogus Journey, when the evil robot Usses say it, it's like, well, yeah, they're evil. Like, it bothers me less because it's like, well, yeah, they're not supposed to be nice people, you know. It bothers me more when sweet, you know, Bill and loving Ted say it, because they're so positive all the time to everyone else. Why would they use those words? But it makes sense for evil robot people to. I'm not saying it's excusable, but I get, you know,
right,
why the evil robots would.
Yeah. I mean, maybe you were on the fence about whether they were evil, and then finally it's like, okay, I got it.
But back to Cloud Atlas, which
did think of another one that was
Cloud Atlas down the road.
It's like a Dave situation. That's The Great Dictator. Chaplin plays sort of his standard little tramp character, but then also Adenoid Hinkle or something like that. I forget the name of the character fully. It might be that, but and two very different performances, of course. Yeah.
But it also reminded me, there's like a Prince and the Pauper type thing in History of the World Part One.
Sure.
And I guess Mel Brooks does that a lot, 'cause he's like Scroob and
yogurt.
That's a first idea. As a Yoda. Anyway,
you can just imagine, like, what I imagine is like Mel Brooks sitting by himself, and instead of Yoda, he says yogurt, and then he lets out a Jimmy Pardo like "aha," and then but then just like mistakes that for a fully developed idea.
But then in Blazing Saddles, also, he's the governor, right? God, what is it?
I don't remember.
I keep wanting to say Prefontaine, but that's the runner, Steve Prefontaine. But it's correct, something like that.
Yeah.
But then also he's the Indian chief.
Yeah, that's very, right.
Very sensitive performance there. What's funny, the thing that is funny about him playing the Indian chief is he doesn't do the Indian, like,
no.
He does the, like, Brooklyn Jew stereotype. Yeah.
If anything, he's just like, I'm just going to be more me if I can. Yeah, and it's funny, I don't even think about that. And similarly, and of course we're back into comedy now, but in The Jerk, Steve Martin plays Navin and then also plays the cat juggler in the film within the film.
That's funny.
So, and you know, and you know, I think, was it Nothing But Trouble? I think Dan Aykroyd and John Candy both have dual roles there.
Okay.
That are...
Yeah, I try not to think about that movie, and people...
That's probably for the
people
best.
People seem to always want to remind me of that movie.
Do they do so pleasantly? Like, do they remember it fondly?
No, but it seems to just come up. Well, I guess it also came up because... God, I feel like I can never stop talking about musicians who died, but Shock G died a couple months ago from the rapper who's in the movie. Digital Underground, is that what they were?
That sounds right to me, yes.
He became famous for like the Humpty dance, which was kind of like put him in a box because Humpty was like not who Shock G was. It was like a character that he played in certain songs, and that just became who he was. Yeah. Anyway, but I guess that's Chuck G and Humpty are two different songs. Kind of like how Marshall Mathers is
right.
Eminem and Slim Shady. And I guess Marshall Mathers, there's three.
Man, oh man. It's like the Father, Son, Holy Spirit. I was thinking of Nothing But Trouble and how it's an incredibly ugly film. And I remember Siskel and Ebert hated it. And they said, like, it's just one of many movies that were greenlit because of Beetlejuice. And then Beetlejuice got me to Michael Keaton, which got me to Multiplicity.
Wow, where, I haven't seen that in so long.
Yeah, where he plays four different characters.
Yeah. I mean, that was probably like a new release VHS rental when I saw it. So that's how long it's been.
Then yeah, I saw it in the theater. 97? That sounds right to me. 97, maybe 96. But I saw it in the theater, and that was the last time I saw it. But so you have your main character, and then he clones himself. But each one is like a different aspect of himself is played up more. So like one is like a much more like macho masculine. One is more like sort of neat and tidy and very Felix Unger-ish. And then one of the clones makes a clone and that character is just like off.
Yeah.
And it's enjoyable to see him play that broad.
Yeah.
Cause I feel like, certainly with, I mean, obviously like Beetlejuice and then something like that, I feel like he hasn't gotten a chance to be that ridiculous and Much Ado About Nothing. I feel like he hasn't had a chance to be that over the top in a long time.
I didn't even think, like, if you get into like clones and robots, we could go down a whole other path. I want to say In the Island doesn't, because Scarlett Johansson and Ewan McGregor are clones. I feel like we meet the real Scarlett Johansson. Do we meet the real both of them?
I don't remember.
I didn't like that movie very much.
I remember I liked the first half of it. Like the sci-fi part of it, and then it just gives away fully to action and all that.
And I try not to talk about TV too much, but there's Sarah Michelle Gellar played Buffy the Vampire Slayer and also the Buffy Bot, which like an evil genius made a robot version of her that's like a hyper like sexualized airhead, but is still a robot and still like super strong and can fight. And the Buffy bot ends up like coming up. It's like it's clearly like a one episode joke thing that the show was like, oh, we can't let this get away. And like, they kept finding reasons to bring back the Buffy bot. Sarah Michelle Gellar, underrated actor, I think.
That's probably true. Mostly cause I rarely, having not seen a single episode of Buffy, I'm sure if I did, I would think of her more in general. But
speaking of TV, we didn't talk about Garrett Dillahunt playing two completely different characters.
Yeah,
on Deadwood, I feel like it was like David Milch liked him and was sad that he killed him off five episodes in, and then find a reason to bring him back for season two.
Yeah, only to kill him again.
Yeah, he's got a whole season that time.
And then I was just like, well, you've set a precedent. Bring him in for season three. What's wrong with you?
Yeah.
And he does have, like, I do believe we see a brief flash of him
in the movie.
Movie.
He is in the movie. Very, very briefly.
I was thinking of Siskel and Ebert, and you know, it's always fun to go onto YouTube and watch their like worst of the year episodes. Cause I do think I don't remember what year, but they were talking about movies in which actors played multiple roles. And there was a movie called Trading Moms in which Sissy Spacek plays multiple characters, where like it's sort of like the movie North in its own way, though I think it came out first, where like these kids are tired of their own moms, so they're looking at like different moms, but they're all played by Sissy Spacek, and but they're all just different types. There's like a fun soccer mom, but then there's like this really almost like a Devil Wears Prada kind of high society mom, but they're all played by her. I haven't seen the movie, and apparently it was one of the worst of the year according to Siskel and Ebert. But yeah, and even that, I mean, it's a comedy, and it's also sort of meant for children. But even that has there's a reason. I feel like there's a reason for it, which is I guess you could say actor's vanity, but also this idea that like they're looking for someone else, but in actuality,
right,
it's all just going to be sort of it's always going to be a mom, and you're always going to have a problem with authority or whatever, and you're just naturally going to fight against whoever it is.
You're reminding me of like there are some movies where it's like, you know, kind of like mindfucky type movies where it's like, is this two different characters? So like there are two Patricia Arquettes in Lost Highway.
Yeah.
Or are there?
Oh.
And then that's kind of the whole premise of Enemy, that Jake Gyllenhaal might be the same person, or
that's true. Yes. I forgot about Enemy.
Yeah.
I wish I liked that movie more.
I know the main reason you don't.
Oh boy. Yeah. Don't remind me of that. It's also just
there's a scared of spiders in case you didn't know.
We've
talked about it before. That's the movie where no one expects there to be spiders, and then there are spiders like a lot, a lot in the movie.
It's off-putting. And it's also the last image of the film. Oh boy, it's getting me already just thinking about it. I keep bringing up my in some capacity, I keep bringing up my documentary, because obviously it's about horror and that sort of thing. And so I do have a section devoted to spiders. And while I was editing that section, I had horrible nightmares about spiders and tarantulas specifically. And so I really wanted to. And I wanted other people to feel my pain.
I missed my chance when we were talking about History of the World Part 1 and like one of the characters being a king, talk about the Man in the Iron Mask.
Yeah, I kind of skipped over it. I mentioned it, but obviously in every situation, like it's a dual role. Just because of my age, I think of like the one with DiCaprio.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's been adapted multiple times.
There are also, like, in Googling this, there are things that, like, someone who's, like, in a movie then also has a cameo where they're kind of disguised and you don't realize it. I'm not really counting that because it seems more like a trivia thing. But apparently, and maybe people know this, in the part when Forrest Gump is running,
mm-hmm.
one of the reporters who asks him a question is played by Sally Field, who also plays his mom.
Really?
Apparently, that's something that I learned from Googling. I didn't know that.
I wasn't planning on watching Forrest Gump anytime soon, but now I feel like I have to.
You can just watch the one scene.
Sure.
Oh, and
there's a lot of good in Forrest Gump. It's unfortunate. Like, I don't love the movie by any stretch, but there's a lot of good.
That's always my problem with Robert Zemeckis, is that like I can never just. I wish I could just dismiss his movies out of hand.
Yeah.
When I don't like them, but like. Welcome to Marwen is fascinating, and then it has the most dumb, pandering, insulting ending. That's all often the case with my complaint about Robert Zemeckis, is that he puts stuff in his movies. He builds a time machine out of a DeLorean that I'm like, do you think that's funny, or do you think us dumb rubes will think that's funny? And that's how I feel about a lot of the stuff in his movies, is that like he hangs a lantern on stuff, or he panders, or he kind of like second guesses himself.
Yeah.
But I think his instincts are so fascinating, and when he sticks to it, and when it works all the way through, like with Who Framed Roger Rabbit, or in my opinion, Allied. I know a lot of people love Allied. I really like it.
Castaway.
Good. I like. Yeah. I need to rewatch What Lies Beneath. It's been way too long.
It's been a long time for me as well. Yes.
But by the way, speaking of Jake Gyllenhaal, as I was before, he's also got the thing in Nocturnal Animals where he's a novelist.
Yeah,
and then we're also seeing the novel.
Yeah,
and he's the main character there. So I'm not sure if that
is he the only overlap. Like, do we see Aaron Taylor Johnson or anybody else, like a version of them in real life?
I don't think so. I think it's just him, but
yeah.
Yeah, I could be. I'd be okay with being wrong. Yeah, I didn't. That's speaking of what I was just saying. That's a movie that I can't fully sign off on, Nocturnal Animals, but that's also. It got has some things that got its hooks into me too.
I feel like I need to watch it again. At the time, I don't think I was quite ready for it and what it was doing, and I think I would like to watch it again because it was very striking in a lot of ways.
Yeah. All right, so let's should we get into Cloud Atlas then?
Let's do it.
Because we're not talking about like sorry to not get into Cloud Atlas yet. There are things like the Monty Python movies. Everybody plays a bunch of roles.
Kids in the Hall. Yeah, the whole thing. Yeah,
yeah. But Cloud Atlas. They are all the characters are playing. All the actors are playing different characters. But there are arcs mm-hmm. for many of them. They don't always go in a straight line. Or obviously, an arc doesn't go in a straight line. I'm an idiot.
Yeah, right.
But they don't always go in a logical line. And sometimes they literally do go in a straight line when it's not an arc. Like with Hugh Grant is bad in every
yes
in everyone. He's like guy who stays bad the entire time.
What about Hugo Weaving? Is he? I feel like he's negative the whole time.
Oh, maybe he is. Yeah, I'm trying to.
I definitely know Hugh Grant is, but I think Hugo Weaving is too, but I might be wrong.
Yeah, you're probably right. Any excuse to watch Cloud Atlas again, I'll take it. Tom Hanks clearly has the biggest arc.
Sure,
I think if you actually like plot his things out, sort of chronologically,
right?
Because what's the earliest? Well, no, see, that's not true, because the earliest one is the 70s one where he's a nice guy. He's the doctor.
No,
you're right. The earliest one is the
treacherous doctor.
Yes.
Yes.
Then he's the nice. So he also doesn't go in a straight line because he becomes nice and then gets blown up on a plane.
Yeah.
But then he's like a. Murderous thug of a British writer, British novelist who throws a guy off the roof.
Yeah, throws a critic off a building.
Played by Alistair Petrie, I think, right?
I don't recall.
All right.
But yeah, although, I mean, that character is obviously, like, we don't like him, but also he is charismatic, and we're supposed to kind of like him to a certain extent, right?
Yeah,
I guess. That he's a good guy.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to be alone.
Sure, sure.
Or I wouldn't want to be in the same room with him at all, I don't think.
That's probably right. Clearly he doesn't care for critics that much.
But this is, I mean, there's no mystery to unlock as far as like why the Wachowskis and Tom Tykwer did this. This is kind of the nature of David Mitchell's novel, that these mm-hmm. that things cycle down through time and everything is connected. But it is interesting how they chose to allocate these roles, you know, because I guess I latch onto Tom Hanks because he's not the main character in everyone, but he has a significant presence in every single story. I think he might be the only one. I'm trying to remember because in that one where he's the writer, Holly Berry doesn't even have a line. She just like is a woman on the rooftop who sees him murder the critic.
Yeah. He might be the only one. It's I haven't seen it since I saw it in the theater. I would like to watch it again.
Yeah.
I think I. Because I was not for this. I was looking into the film for other reasons recently, and I think I was surprised at how many actors are in it that show up multiple, like Keith David. I forget that he's in it.
Susan Sarandon is a number of times, including once playing like very problematic, but playing like an old Korean man.
Well, and so this is actually what brought me to like, because in my diversity in cinema class, we were talking about like depictions of like East Asians and that sort of thing, and talking about the idea of whitewashing, but also you get to something like Cloud Atlas And thematically, I get, I mean, you just said it, like the idea of like the cyclical nature of man, and like just seeing, like tracing the ups and downs of man throughout history, and then projecting into the future, and the future as depicted in the film is takes place in, is it Japan, I think, or is it,
no, it's
or
South Korea.
It is South Korea. Yeah. Okay. That's right.
New Seoul.
Yes, of course it would have to be called that, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. How silly of me. I could have arrived there on my own, but, anyway, so like, okay, we're going to focus in on that probably because I imagine the book does as well. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, all right, we got to stick with our thing of having everybody play, you know, these characters, even yeah. though the only one that is, that looks the part is Rinko Kikuchi. Yes.
No, that's not, Dunabai.
Oh, right. Who?
Rinko Kikuchi is from Babel.
Babel. That's she's right. Japanese. Yes. Dunabai. I got them. I'm sorry.
He's Korean.
I feel bad. Now I'm like super racist. I mean, I already was, but now everyone knows.
Right.
But yeah. And so yeah, they only had like one person that is actually of like
yeah.
East Asian descent. And so like,
and I guess in, not that I need to defend it, but, Dunabai does play a white woman at one point
yeah.
in the movie, and then also plays a Mexican woman in the San Francisco one, right? Isn't she supposed to be,
oh, that I don't recall.
At the factory that they, when they're, when Halle Berry and Keith David are being chased right. by Hugo Weaving, they run to a factory, and the Mexican woman who like they surprise, I think, is Dunabai. But then at the end, very end of the earliest one, the anti-slavery mm-hmm. couple, when it comes up, she's like a freckled redheaded girl.
I do remember that because how could you not?
Yeah.
It's like whoa, when did Chucky get involved? but you get to the end and it really is not the end. Sorry, like you see that section and you're just like, okay, I get what they're doing and I get why this is necessary. It does. And I'm not condemning it because it does. It just fits with what they're doing.
There's also,
but
I also wonder when I watch the movie, I don't know if this is intentional or not, but like, this isn't just, it doesn't just take place in Seoul. Here again, I am defending it. I'm not, if you find it troublesome, I have no qualms with that.
Yeah.
But it doesn't just take place in Seoul, it takes place in the distant future. And I've always wondered, is there supposed to be some sort of suggestion that, like, in an increasingly globalized world, ethnic features would start to blend into
it? I did have that thought, and I think that's... It's tough, because I'm absolutely willing to entertain mm-hmm. that notion, and I feel like it's so far in the future that it's like, yeah, maybe this is just... It is this sort of blending of features and ethnicities and that sort of thing. That said, they had to have known that, like, yeah, that might not come through, and people might yeah. just think, we put these, we use a computer and put like these eyes on, Hugh Grant. What do you think?
Yeah. And then that also doesn't hold up to them. Well, then why isn't the distant future one, true one, why is everybody white there, especially
yeah.
since they're, I'm not sure if it's clear, because I've read the novel, so sometimes stuff bleeds in.
Yeah.
Is it clear in the movie that they're in Hawaii?
It wasn't to me,
okay.
but
in the novel, it all but like,
okay,
it clearly says that that's where that takes place. So then that's doubly like troublesome that there are no native Hawaiians left.
Yeah.
Just like the descendants of white people.
Well, there's that line that
literally
Tom
the
Hanks
descendants. It's
yeah.
future Beau Bridges and George Clooney.
There's that line that Tom Hanks' character says where he goes, oh, thank God we resegregated. whew, that was a load off.
Yeah.
It's troublesome, but it's, I won't say that I give it a pass. It's not, it's just that like, yeah, maybe they shouldn't have done it, but I get why they did it. And I'm sure I also want to believe, and I do believe that there was consideration put into it that like, they thought like, okay, this could get us in some trouble. This could be insensitive. It is insensitive in some ways, but it is worth it for what we are doing. I don't know.
But I think it's just, maybe this is my privilege speaking. Like I talked about this on a Patreon episode that might not have aired yet. The idea of my sort of shifting philosophy on separating the art from the artist.
I don't think that's aired yet.
Okay. Well, patreon.com/battleshipretention if you want the full scoop there. But I recognize that, like, my ability to do so comes from a place of, like, not being one of the wronged parties almost ever. I think you can find the Asian face or whatever you would call it wrong and troublesome. I hate that we can't say problematic anymore. It's such a great word, but now it's become it can be troublesome, and Cloud Atlas can still be a good movie.
Yeah,
I feel that way, but I understand why. Maybe if I were Korean, I wouldn't feel that way.
Yeah, again, in the class that I'm teaching, you know, the first movie that we watched was The Lion King, and we talked about, like, the coding of Scar as gay, but also talking about the way the hyenas are depicted and that sort of thing. And we had a really great conversation about it. And one thing that I tried to tell people was, like, you can still love Lion King. It can still be one of your favorite movies.
Yeah.
This doesn't have to ruin your childhood. It's just like acknowledging, like, yeah, maybe this thing wasn't the best, but it can still be tremendously effective. I know that you know, adored Cloud Atlas when it came out, and you still do.
But also, I still
really enjoy it.
This is, you're probably assuming you're dealing with this because you're teaching younger people. Like, our generation doesn't necessarily, like, stand things as much as the younger people do, you know, just like, I'm a fan of this thing, and that is my identity. Like, I'm not saying that's obviously existed for a long time,
sure.
But I feel like it's, I don't know, things like Tumblr or whatever have made that more of a person's just whole ass personality.
Sure.
And so that idea, I it feels like, and now I feel like I'm an old man talking about the young kids, but things, you know, things change. It feels like that idea of, you can recognize that there are problems with the thing that you love is maybe more foreign to a younger demographic than it would be to us. I don't know if that's right.
I don't know. Yeah, I'm really not sure. Not only am I not of that generation, but I also feel like on various levels, I'm not in any position to ask anybody. Because I just, not that it would be inappropriate, but I'm just not sure. Like the my students, because I do occasionally ask my students, like, hey, you're all younger. Like, I remember a couple years ago, I was like, does anybody here listen to podcasts? I wasn't going to mention this, but it's like, does anybody listen to podcasts? And there was like one or two hands. I was like, okay.
Yeah.
Like, whereas if you were to talk to people our age, probably a lot more hands, you know?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's, I would like to sort of take the temperature, and I was literally about to say, like, hey, listeners, weigh in on this. And then I realized, like, no, our listeners are probably our generation, maybe a few years younger here and there, but not enough to be considered,
that reminds
you know, the next generation.
It's just always fascinating how things, like, sort of fall out of, in and out of the consciousness as generations go on. I can't remember the name of the author, but the AV Club had an editorial, just a sort of a farewell to Daniel Craig as James Bond.
Mm-hmm.
And the writer, whose name I'm forgetting, pointed out that, or made, you know, said that Daniel Craig is maybe the first Bond to escape the shadow of Sean Connery. And that's partially due to his performance, but also partially due to the fact that it's been so long that there are James Bond fans who have never really associated Sean Connery with,
sure,
with the role, because it's been, you know, what was the last time he played it? Even if you're counting Never Say Never Again, which doesn't count, it's still like 35 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, yeah. And it's entirely possible. And I'm not even necessarily going to, but I just think media consumption of younger people, whether it be like young on the younger side of our generation or the younger the next generation. There does seem to be this has come through as far as like the classes that I teach, just very much focusing on what's happening now and less interest in where things came from. And maybe that's just the nature of being young.
Yeah, but I think I think people like you and me who were watching old black and white movies in high school, we were the exception to the rule then, and I think would be now. I think that is just a normal, like, young thing. Because I remember, like, my younger brother, who, like, now has, I think, and he's always had good taste, but I remember, like, I can't think of the example, but he was like into some band and I was like, oh, if you like that, you should check out this music from like the 60s or whatever. And he's like, I don't care about that. I like this now, this new thing. I don't need to know.
Yeah. Which, you know, it's interesting as you tell me that story, I'm furious. At your brother, if I could maybe give him a call.
Well, that reminds me. Okay. Avril Lavigne, you remember when she had like Skater Boy out, and she was like referring to herself as like punk and like, I mean, in many ways she obviously wasn't really, what I would think of as punk rock, but, she gave an interview in which people love to like put young women on the spot when they say like this thing. And it's like, oh yeah, answer all these questions.
Right.
And I hate that. But like, she didn't know like something about the Sex Pistols or whatever. And she said something like, why do I need to know about the Sex Pistols? They're like old and I'm young. And like a lot of old punks were like, oh, that's blasphemous. But I was like,
that's a very punk attitude.
The punkiest thing I've ever heard.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I do wonder if maybe like, I think just as you get older, like you just almost by default, you find the things you like. And I don't even just mean like from a pop culture standpoint, it could be like a specific team or something like that, or just a hobby. And you just find that thing along the way. And then the more interest you take in that thing, it's like, well, let's start digging. And I think you and I and people like us probably found our thing at a slightly younger age than others,
right.
Which happened to be movies. But
I love that we got here from Cloud Atlas.
Yeah. I figured we'd get somewhere from Cloud Atlas. I just wasn't sure where, but I
watched it again now.
I do feel self-conscious. I feel old now, like because you and I are like, I feel like you're officially old when you start speculating about people that are younger.
Like what might be going on?
Exactly. Exactly. and realizing like, well, I don't have anyone I could ask because all my friends are also old.
But I think, I mean, we're not dismissing young people. That's the point that I never want to get to.
Where right.
I'm like, I never want to get to that, kids today are worse in some way. Like they might become a mystery to me as they are becoming, as I'm getting older, but I think I still trust that they are people enough to consider their opinions and values, however different they may be from my own, to be valid.
Yeah. And also that idea of like, a young person is experiencing a very specific kind of problem that as you get older, you realize like this is when you are older, you're going to realize this is not a big deal. It's like, yes, but a person needs to arrive there on their own in order to actually get there. You can't really rush them through that. Just the nature of life is that you have to experience it. It has to be the end all be all to you. And only in retrospect, do you realize, oh, you know what? Probably wasn't that big of a deal.
Can't go around it. Got to go through it.
Exactly.
All right. I think that's a good place to end. You can find us at battleshipretention.com. You can email us at david@battleshipretention.com or tyler@battleshipretention.com. You can follow me, David, on Twitter @DavyPretension. You can also check out my other podcast, The One Where I Met Your Mother, where my wife, Natalie, and I watch one episode of Friends and one episode of How I Met Your Mother every week. This week was a fucking slog because I went into this, for people who don't know the premise, Natalie is a much bigger fan of Friends than I am. I've only seen like sort of a handful. I'm also a much bigger fan of How I Met Your Mother. She's seen almost none at all. And so I went in knowing, like, Friends has a reputation for things having not aged well in terms of, like, right. It's a lot of gay panic jokes. And Natalie has warned me there's some transphobic things coming up that I am gritting my teeth for. This pairing of episodes we watched this week was trying on both shows, because we had Ross acting in a way that's supposed to be like him pining for Rachel, but in retrospect, given what we've, you know, what we've since learned about this sort of like nice guy, whatever archetype, sure, actually comes across as like really like ugly and spiteful and vindictive and mean.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, oh, watch that. I'm like, oh, glad that's over with me. Go to the much more woke and enlightened How I Met Your Mother. No, they did an episode that featured a sex worker. Obviously didn't use that term because we weren't using that term widely in 2006. But has some, you would think it was just as old as Friends, if not older, the regressive and demeaning ways that it talks about sex work. And so I would just got whiplashed from one very upsetting thing to the next. And you can hear me and Natalie unpack all that on the one where I met your mother this week.
Sounds great. Yeah. Sounds very appetizing.
You can, I mean, we're also like super cute and everything.
That's true, yes.
You can follow Tyler on Twitter at Tyler Pretension. Tyler, do you have anything to plug?
Not right now, but be on the lookout for my documentary Valley of the Shadow, The Spiritual Value of Horror, which will be coming out the last week of this month, just in time for Halloween. And I will tell you more as we get there.
All right. Other than that, thanks for listening.
We'll get you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
This program is a proud member of the Battleship Pretension Fleet.